Thou dost get a rope thrown to thee as she goes on by. Then by the time the ship's turned round, thou hast been in the water for an hour, likely more. Chance of finding a fingernail in a ton of manure is better than getting thyself picked up. So the cold or the sharks get thee. And it's better that thou dost go down fast and stay down. Less pain, Outlander. I can't take much more of the pain in.
So you chill, Piraquad?
Oh, no.
Why not? You told me that I should.
Thou still knowest her not. She's faster and stronger than nearly any man on board. Harder, more cruel. Ruthless and all. She'd kill me.
Likely she'll kill me, Johnny.
Yeah, likely she will, Outlander. But if thou dost want a chance, thou must to strike quick and straight, like a snake, or else...
Or else?
Or she'll draw the blaster, cuff thee in chains to her bed. Frames cold iron bolted to the bulkheads and deck. Once that's happened, thou art deader than salt pig.
I get it. Hadn't figured she'd... I'll think on it, Johnny Flynn. Sharks are the bitch. Fine choice. But there was no answer. And when he turned on his heel and walked aft along the deck, the space between the windlass was filled only with the suffocating wall of fog.
Too thick.
Aye. I can no longer hazard my vessel and my men.
You know we aren't in danger from the shore. You told us. There's no more land out there for 1,000 miles.
There's Piraquad.
Overhearing the conversation, Jack came into the cabin to join the others.
Captain, we come out to sea to catch you. No other reason. Must be close, no?
Yep, sure. But all thou hast asked is that we get to her and tie alongside. You will take those cannons you got and blast the living savior out of anything and anybody that gets in your way. Simple as that. Have I got it right?
Sure did, Captain. All you gotta do is put a man way out on the pointed thing at the front. Bowsprit, would it be called?
Deacon sucked at his teeth and said nothing.
Out there. Sharpest man you... Wait. Christy, think you can do it?
Dunno. This fog distorts so much. But if we keep death quiet, we gotta hear them before they hear us. Can have a half dozen men relaying the bearing and distance back to Captain Deacon here at the stern. How's that sound?
Deacon's expression didn't change. Finally, he held out his hand to the girl, who shook it with a smile that brightened the poorly lit cabin.
I'll do it, little lady. Truth is, when thou shanghaied the Phoenix and held a blaster to my head, well, darnation, I could have seen thee all over the side and I'd have been smiling as I sailed on. Now's different. I'll help thee. We'll do as thou sayest. Thou hast muty hearing, lady?
Sort of. And I can see, you know. Like a doomy, but not as clear.
The skipper looked at the flame-haired young woman.
What dost thou see of thy friends on the Salvation?
Christy closed her eyes.
Nothing plain. I think the fog's clouding everything down. And it feels like Ryan's in danger, but he's got choices that confuse things.
So, all of you wish to go on in now. Not wait?
J.B. looked the silver-haired man in the eyes.
We go in. Soon as we get to her, we go alongside and hit her hard. Maybe try and hold her with the blasters. They won't fight so hard if their ship's going down under them.
I thank the Lord that I'm on your side.
They came for Ryan. 4 members of the crew escorted Donful away, keeping him under guard, including Cyrus Ogg, who was hefting a well-preserved Webley revolver.
Captain wouldn't want thee harmed, Outlander, 10 from 10.
Ryan's foursome were Second Mate Walsh, Yehu, a pockmarked seaman named Ned, and Johnny Flynn. Walsh was armed with a rusting Glock 9mm pistol, while Ned held a sawed-off scattergun, bracing himself against it as though he were terrified the weapon would go off without warning. The other 2 men wielded belaying pins. Johnny Flynn caught Ryan's eye and shrugged his shoulders helplessly, struggling to convey the message through body language that this was none of his choosing. Ryan hadn't expected such a heavily armed escort to Piraquad's bed of sexual delights. The fog seemed even thicker, the vessel blanketed in a damp silence. There wasn't a breath of wind to tug at the bellying canvas, not a ripple on the gray glass of the Atlantic. Ned led the way along the deck, shuffling sideways, stumbling over ring bolts and coiled rope.
Keep thy finger off that nuke-withered trigger, thou triple fish-gunner! One fall and thou wouldst blast us all to red spray and bone!
The mate was behind Ryan, with Yehu and Flynn bringing up the rear. The crazy was smiling, his grin filling his tiny face. And as they walked aft, he kept up a ceaseless chatter of nonsense.
Cheese and water and bread and wine and chalk. Sacrament at the fount of youth and life and death.
Ryan said nothing, concentrating on readying himself for what was to come. The shotgun had been an unpleasant surprise. If he made a move to go over the side now, the nervous seaman would probably blow him in two.
He's here.
The five men were crowded together in the narrow corridor at the bottom of the short flight of steps down from the quarterdeck.
Bring him in!
The second mate turned the brass handle and opened the heavy door. Pyrrha Quad was lying on her double-sized bunk. She'd washed and curled her hair, which was coiled tight around her angular skull. Her face was heavily made up, with eyes ringed in mascara and lips slashed scarlet. Her dress was amazing. Occasionally in parts of the Deathlands, you might find an old magazine from before the bright heat. Ryan had seen dozens in his time, and some of them had carried features on what the well-dressed lady of the town should wear for an evening's entertainment. Captain Quad's dress seemed to date from that era. It was strapless, cut low at the front, allowing most of her breasts to surge upward. Then it tapered to the waist and flounced out again until it reached her feet in a tumble of material. It was covered in glittery, shimmery patches of sequin and diamante. There were layers of different colors, one over the other, giving an impression of great richness of texture. Green predominated, with fiery orange and red, covering deeper tones of blue and purple. Lace and chiffon puffed its way to the surface of the dress in several places. Yet despite the ornate finery and elegance of the dress, Ryan's overwhelming impression was of decay. He could almost taste the dry flavor of the tomb and the winding cloth about the rotting splendor of Pyrrha Quad's gown. It was as though she'd risen from some underground catafalque, burst open the bronze doors of an ancient sarcophagus.
Come in, Outlander. I've been waiting for thee.
The room carried the heavy smell of homebrew usquebaugh. On the table near the bed was an assortment of Pyrrha Quad's toys. Three whips of varying length, one with tips made from tiny steel nails, an open razor, its edge dulled with old dried blood, a broad-bladed cleaver and a slim dagger, several coils of silken cord, one with knots all along its length, a mask of supple leather, with what looked like an inflatable phallus-shaped gag attached. A dirty hypodermic needle rested in a stained metal kidney dish over a small spirit lamp.
What dost thou want us to do with him, man?
Strip and cuff him, of course. Didn't think thou wouldst need telling, Mr. Walsh.
Ryan saw then that the bed had a frame of solid iron, painted black, with several sturdy metal rings set into it at both top and bottom. Once a man was chained there, his life would be done.
No!
Flynn backed up against the door of the cabin. The captain stood up slowly.
How's this, madman?
No! This must stop! Thou dost bring this on thyself, by thy...
The pistol in the man's hand was steady. Ryan recognized it as a Polish blaster from the middle of the 20th century. It was a pocket-sized 6.35mm handgun. Not of much use above 20 paces, but sufficient in a small, cribbed room.
Thought I heard a rat sneaking around the ship's gun chest an hour or so back. And it was little Johnny all along.
Let him be! Come, Outlander.